I want to say again to those who are visiting with us today that we're glad to have you. We hope you've received a warm welcome from those of us who work and worship here on a regular basis. We just want you to know we're glad you're here today. And so if you'll turn there to Luke 10, 25 through 37. Familiar passages are hard to study. We think we know what to teach, and are we really sure? So this is the parable of the Good Samaritan. Behold, a certain lawyer stood up and tested him, saying, Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? And he said to him, What's written in the law? What's your reading of it? So he answered and said, You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself. And he said to him, You've answered rightly. Do this and you live. But he wanted to justify himself and said to Jesus, And who is my neighbor? Jesus answered and said, A certain man went down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among thieves who stripped him of his clothing, wounded him, and departed, leaving him half dead. Now by chance a certain priest came down the road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. Likewise a Levite. When he arrived at the place, came and looked and passed by on the other side. But a certain Samaritan, as he journeyed, came where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion. So he went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine, and set him on his own animal, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. On the next day, when he departed, he took out 2 denarii, gave them to the innkeeper, and said to him, Take care of him, and whatever more you spend, when I come again, I'll repay you. So which of these 3 do you think was neighbor to him who fell among thieves? And the lawyer said, He who showed mercy on him. Then Jesus said to him, You go do likewise. Now that particular passage of Scripture I have heard preached and taught for years. And my experience has been very limited, very narrow and very disappointing because I have been encouraged to be the Good Samaritan. And so often I have failed to do that. I get encouraged out of the enthusiasm of the teacher or the preacher, he encourages me to be a good Samaritan. And I go home and I sit down in front of the TV and all of it pales into insignificance. And I find myself being disappointed with me. Because I have failed to be that good Samaritan. So I've asked myself the question, is there more to this story than I have been exposed to? So I've given some thought to that. I believe there's more to the story than I have been exposed to. I want very much to find myself in this story. So I say, where do I fit in? May I ask you, where do you fit in? As you travel down your road of life to Jericho, where do you fit in the picture? In Hebrews 12 and verse 1, we are encouraged to run with endurance the race that is set before us. But we're always on our way to Jericho. That 18 to 20 mile trek down from Jerusalem, it's a bloody pass. In that particular mileage, it descends some 3,000 feet through curves, caves, bloody pass it's called. So what I'd like to do this morning is unpack this story. I want to know where I fit in. So first of all, we have the robber, or the robbed. He's the victim. Ever been a victim? I've been a victim. Ever been robbed? I've been robbed. You see, I believe this man was foolish knowing the bloody past, knowing all of the things he could be exposed to that would jeopardize his life, he went alone. Why was he going to Jericho? Was it an emergency? Was he checking on an aged parent or a sick relative? Was he going to a funeral? Was he going to see a lawyer? Was he going to close a business deal? We all have made foolish mistakes. We all go off half-cocked sometimes. He went alone. And so some of us think there are no good Samaritans on the road of life. In life, you're going to be wounded, but you need to learn when you're wounded, you're not dead. And so on the road of life, we find ourselves going to Jericho. So what are you going to do? What are you going to do when your relationship is stripped from you? When your health or your job or your future? What are you going to do when you're there lying in the ditch, wounded, on the road of life, you've been robbed? First of all, you need to realize I'm not dead. Now then, who are the people that have robbed you? Do you know their name? Robbed you of your time. Robbed you of your peace of mind. Maybe robbed you of some money. They've beat up on your self-esteem and your feelings. They've fractured your confidence in people. You've been humiliated in the front of others by this person. In Acts chapter 9, verses 26 and 27, when Paul might have been pushed out of the church, robbed of the joy of serving, Barnabas steps in for him and says, "Accept this fellow." You see, you've been overpowered by someone's influence or position. You've been taken advantage of in a business deal. You've been outnumbered trying to defend your reputation or your position in life. Your peace and harmony has been disrupted because of this ambush. Yet there are people who have robbed you and you have become the victim. But on the other hand, there are the robbers. Their attitude is totally selfish. What's yours is mine and I will take it. They satisfy themselves at your expense. They deprive or take from or intimidate. Yet I must admit, I'm a robber. I have robbed people. You know the people you've robbed? I know their name. I know when it happened. Maybe you've taken your friendship from them for some petty excuse or reason. Maybe you've shown favoritism openly. Maybe you've taken advantage of someone unfairly, physically, emotionally, or financially. You have intimidated to the point of controlling someone's conduct or decision. You've dominated the situation unnecessarily with a shy, non-aggressive person. Overpowered them. Been uncaring in your attitude toward others, their burdens, their baggage, their carrying. But you know what? I justify that and say, I've got to get to Jericho. I've got places to go. I've got things to do. How about you? Been uncaring in attitude toward others and their burdens and the baggage. Manipulated someone or many. Dominated the situation in a conversation with a person, not giving them the opportunity to express their feelings, their ideas, their concerns, their opinions, their fears. You see, I'm an expert in my opinion. Are you? If you're not, I'd get one that I would be an expert in. And so when you ask me my opinion and deny me the opportunity to tell you, you have robbed me. And I've done that very thing to others. And I don't like that about myself. I don't joy and gloat in that. Keeping someone from doing something for you. But thus, I've robbed them of the joy of giving. In Acts 20 and verse 35, it is more blessed to give than to receive. Someone says to me, "Preacher, I like that tie." And I say, "Oh, it's nothing." And they think, "Why did I bring that up?" I've learned to say, "You know, someone who loves me bought this tie for me, and I enjoy wearing it. Thank you very much. I'm glad you like it." Or what a potluck dinner. "I've never tasted green beans like this." So I say, "You know who cooked these green beans?" "I don't know. Maybe it was..." And you try to find out who cooked the... And you find out, and the woman said, "Oh, it's nothing." Said, "That's my grandma's... That's grandma's recipe." Why did I bring that up? She just flattened me. She just hit me with a cold dish rag. Not allowing someone to give you a compliment, I rob them of the joy of giving. Yes, I've been someone's difficult person today. Already. And the day is young. How about you? But yet there are the priests and the Levites. These are the avoiders. The priest and the Levite should have been the model of pity. Fellow Jew, the priest was. Pillars of the temple function. By birth and calling, they were a neighbor. Under obligation to help this man. But no, they did not. Selfish indifference. There were 12,000 priests in Jericho. Here was one. He's on his way now to Jericho. But the Levite, the son of Levi, doorkeepers in the house of God, singers of the temple's choir, were chosen from this group, was also considered a neighbor. Yet he had a cool, calculated selfishness. So, they avoided the poor victim. They did what I call rubbernecking. We see an accident on the side of the road. We don't know who's hurt, but we know there has been some sort of an emergency, a collision. And we drive by. We're not going to stop and help. We just want to see how much blood is there. See how much damage. So we can tell the first person that we get to when we get to our destination, "You should have seen this." These guys were rubberneckers. You see, they had religious work to do. They had to get to Jericho. Touching a dead person would have made them unclean for 7 days, and they couldn't do any church work. So therefore, I'm not going to get involved. All of us have somewhere else to go to avoid being godly. Don't want to get mixed up in a time-consuming mess. Situations you don't want to deal with. People you do not want to associate with. The alcoholic, the homosexual, the lonely, the needy, the unwed mother, the homeless. The immoral, the unfaithful, the couple who's having a lot of problems with their child or children or married child. I don't want to get involved in all that. And so they consider you a friend, and you have caller ID, and their number comes up, and you say, oh, no. I can't talk an hour right now. But we can use the gospel gun on them. Acts 2:38. We can direct them to another agency. Don't want to get mixed up in a time-consuming mess. You see, our compassion is not very concise. It's very wordy. Don't want to get caught in the crossfire of a feud. See people's condition and do not lend assistance. Galatians 6 and verse 10, therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially those of the household of faith. How many times have I avoided doing good? Avoid the issue. Avoid the subject. Some people are peace lovers. Some are peacemakers. So as we go to Jericho, this person's life is in such a mess, so involved, and in need of assistance, lying there on the ditch, on the road of life, I find myself just walking by. Do you do that too? I have an opportunity and I let it go. Avoid people in the ditch emotionally, spiritually, financially, socially. Avoid being godly and showing mercy. Here we are on the interstate. We're going down the interstate. The speed limit is 70. You've got to pass this person, so you get out in the fast lane and you get up to 79 miles an hour and you get back over in your lane and all of a sudden a blue light comes on behind you. Well, you pull over. Can you do ask for the proper paperwork? You give them paperwork. You now, he says, do you know why I stopped you? No. Play dumb. No. He said, well, Mr. Rowley, you were going 79 miles an hour in a 70-mile speed zone. I said, well, I had to get around. He said, you know what? You know what do I want, justice or mercy? Huh? I want mercy. So he said, I'll be back in a minute. Goes back to his car, comes back in a minute. He said, Mr. Rowley, I'm going to give you a warning. If I catch you again, you're going to pay. So I go down the road, 5 or 10 miles down the road, and a guy goes by me and just blows my doors off. I said, that guy get you. About 10 miles down the road, he's pulled him over. What do I want him to get? Give him justice. He blew my doors off. Why are we that way? We have the attitude that there are so many people on the road of life that are victims of life. I can't help them all, so therefore it's useless. This little boy was on the beach. A bunch of sand dollars were laying there, and he's picking them up, and he's throwing them back out into the water. And a guy walks by, and he said, son, you'll never get them all back in the water. It's not going to do any good. He said, it'll make a difference with this one. Make a difference with this one. And he throws some back. It'll make a difference. But yet there's that Samaritan. He has the attitude, what I have, I will share. And for this passage to have the meaning that the Lord wants it to have, scratch out that name in your mind, scratch out Samaritan, and write in that place a name of a group that you despise. It could be those people that live over there. It could be a deadbeat. It could be illegals. It could be a terrorists. Write that name in there. The one that I despise. And Jews despised Samaritans. Matter of fact, they were so prejudiced they would not eat an egg that came from a Samaritan hen if they knew it. No one will say shame on you if you do it. But our trip to Jericho is an opportunity to be like God. Yet personal plans and desires and ambitions and prejudices get in our way. But the Samaritan's attitude was, I may lose my life if I help this man, but I'll not lose my soul. You took a risk. You went out on the edge to do good. You've been told by others. I don't see how you do it. There have been these occasions in your life where you've been a good Samaritan. You go out of your way to help others. You freely give to others. In Acts 4 and verse 34 and 35, they sold their land and brought the money and laid it at the feet of the apostles. You emotionally involve yourself in someone else's problems. You bought items and give them away. You've been hospitable to people whom others have considered unworthy. Maybe you've given someone your car or your bed or your seat or your position in line. And enthusiasm overtakes you and someone comes and says, a friend says, my car is broken down. It'll be in the shop for 3 days. And you say, well, here, take the car. Take my car. And your wife is behind you saying, give him the truck. Give him the truck. But you want to be that good Samaritan. And you do on occasions. What do I have to have within me to help those who are in the ditch? I suggest you have to have godliness in your heart. What gets in my way that keeps me from helping those in the ditch? You know, someone may be in the ditch and they may be just as clean and sparkling and starchy as they can be. But emotionally, they're in the ditch. Did you know a smile is understood in every language? Maybe what they need is a smile. Maybe what they need is a hello, how are you today? And we don't even do that often. In the South, we're known for our friendliness and openness and hospitality. Yet so many of us have failed. But yet, here's this man. He didn't just stop and see how he was doing. He went over and checked this man's injuries. He bandaged him up. He put something on that would take care of the pain. Can you imagine what it would be like to get this man on his vehicle, on his animal, and hear this man, ooh and ah and oh, that hurts. And he takes him to a safe place. He takes him to an inn. And he pays for it and he spends the night with him. The next day when he gets ready to leave, he tells this fella, here's what I owe you now then. I'm going to give you some more money. And when I come back, if I owe you anything else, I'll give that to you. This man was in it for the long haul. And when I think about that, I think about that's what Jesus did for me. He got involved in me for the long haul. There I was on the road of life, in the ditch. The devil had convinced me the life that I was living was good. And I was dying because I had a terminal disease. The wages of sin is death. And Jesus invited me to come. When this good Samaritan helped this Jew, he didn't resist. He knew help was there and he wanted that help and he accepted that help. For God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son, that whosoever believes on Him should have everlasting life. But God commendeth His own love toward us, and while they were yet sinners, Christ died for us. So He's involved to the end. I'll never leave you, He says. That was his focus. But yet there's that innkeeper. I find myself being that good Samaritan, but then the innkeeper had to take this guy. Have you ever wondered when you stop at a motel, the kind of people that stay there? The kind of responsibility that man has or that woman has that's in charge of that facility? There are people who come in there who are sick and tired and troubled and drunk and sober and old and young. And crippled and immature and weary and bereaved and depressed and unloved and single and immoral. I'm staying right next to him. Yet here's this innkeeper. He's been handed these people this responsibility to take care of them and provide their safety through the night. So someone has been referred to you by others. Or people say, "Preacher, there's this person I'd like for you to talk to." And they start telling me all that's going on. And I say, "Oh my. Their life looks like a plate of spaghetti. I don't know how to connect the ends." And they hand them off to me. You ever been handed something that's fragile? Been handed responsibility for something fragile? Got involved with a person that was not enjoyable. The involvement tied you down. And on your road of life to Jericho, now you find yourself being a caretaker. So has being a caretaker or an innkeeper made you judgmental? What has it taught you? That not all priests and Levites are of orders. Not all of them are cold-hearted. Not all Samaritans are good. I tend to see these people on the interstate there at the exit that say, "Homeless, need help. Vietnam vet, God bless you." And I wonder, why are they like they are? And I happen to remember, my mother was like that. This person maybe took some wrong advice that started them on that downward spiral. And that's why they are where they are. And then I happen to think, and Adam called his wife's name Eve because she was the mother of all living. She took some wrong advice. And so did I. I learned to be judgmental. You know, where am I in the story? Let me tell you where I am. I am the story. I'm a victim. I'm a robber. I'm an avoider. I'm a good Samaritan. And I'm a caregiver. So what do I have to have? What do I have to help people on the road of life? Now that I realize and I can understand all these situations. Because that's what I am. I'm the story. Incidentally, where are you in the story? Do you know? Did you find yourself in there somewhere today? In the story. Don't you wonder what caused these people, their attitude to become what they were in this story? What caused them to be what they were? When I get out on the road of life, my values, my core values must be in check. Because when I get out on the road of life, people are going to need some help. And so what if I come to the end of life, to the judgment, and realize that responsive caring is the measure of spirituality? Jesus, I believe, in this story just gave us practical spirituality. Being godly. Today, do you find yourself on the side of the road, in the ditch, wounded, scarred, dying in your sin? Jesus says to you, if you have the courage of conviction as a believer to turn from all your sin, confess what you believe about His deity, and that is, He is the Son of God, die to self-rule and self-will and be buried with your Lord by baptism into death, raised to walk in newness of life, the Lord will add you to His church, give you a new name, Christian. I want you to wear that name proudly. So He invites you to come and take that, and then He waits to see what you will do. He won't force you. Do you realize the need? Maybe in times past you have responded to Him, but your love has grown cold. You become more of an avoider. Good Samaritan, maybe occasionally. But somehow you just need to be renewed and just say, God, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I want to start over. As a child of yours, I want to start over. We'll pray with you today. We'll help you in whatever way we can. The Lord extends His invitation. What will you do? Meet you down front as we stand and sing.